From the Land to Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of April, 2026. It's the beginning of our spring fund drive. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Glickson. First, thank you. Thank you so very much for listening. Secondly, it is because of you, it really is, because of you that we are still here talking about agriculture on Illinois public media. And finally, we still need your help. If you can make a gift today, a financial contribution, it would be fantastic. You can do that in two ways. It's simple, quick, and easy at 217-244-9455, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express. Tell us you're going to send a check, but call now, 217-244-9455, or online at willgive.org. That's willgive.org. In either case, either put in the comments section or tell the person you're talking to in support of agriculture. Now, coming up, we'll talk today about the markets with Kurt Kimmel. We'll hear from FAPRI, the Food and Agriculture Policy Research Institute, about its 10-year outlook for agriculture. And we'll discuss metribuzin, a way to control water hemp, as well as looking at the agricultural weather forecast. We'll do that with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.52, up 3 1/4. July, $4.60 1/4, 2 3/4 higher. And December futures up 2.5 cents at $4.79 1/2. The May soybeans, $11.65 3/4, 1 1/2 cents lower. July down 1 1/4 at $11.81 3/4. And new crop November soybeans, $11.57 3/4, up 1 1/4. Bean meal futures down $6.70. The bean oil for the day, $1.47 higher. Wheat futures, soft red, up 6 3/4 in the July contract. That's the harvest month at 6.06. And the hard red July at 6.47 1/2, down 2 1/2 cents. Live cattle futures, $1.27 1/2 lower. Feeders down $4.32 1/2, and lean hogs up 67 1/2 cents for the day. Crude oil and the WTI at $87.08 a barrel, up $4.50 or thereabouts. And the Brent crude oil at also $4 higher, $4.74 up, in fact, at $95.12. Gasoline around 10 cents higher for the day at $3.03 a gallon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at AgMarket.net in Normal, Illinois. Kurt, thank you first for being a long-term analyst with Illinois Public Media. We sure do appreciate it because of you. Our programming really works. And we also want to thank our listeners, too, during this beginning of our fall fund drive because they do a great job of supporting our program. So thank you, Kurt.
Well, you're quite welcome. It's well worth being part of it and also listening and learning. Call it the Information Center, Todd. You provide a lot of good analysts with a lot of information, and you kind of eliminate some of that fake news we've been hearing here over the years. Appreciate it. Well, thank you.
Yeah, you know, thank you. For those who think that it's worthwhile, and I hope you do, to make a pledge, you could do that at 217-244-9455 or at willgive.org. What was it that took place over the weekend and that was in the news that impacted the trade in Chicago today and overnight last night, Kurt?
Yeah, I saw a meme on Twitter. It says, straight close, straight open, straight close, straight. It's open and close, open and close. I don't know if anybody knows anymore. But
it's like looking into a refrigerator to see the lights on or not.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you, I think the trade's getting kind of numb to it, particularly the grains. I mean, energies are a little higher, of course, on that. But just reading, I don't know if you read between the lines or just kind of go with the flow here. The news is actually, the reaction out of Washington is kind of mild. I don't know if they're up to something here, something can come loose here midweek or not, but that's kind of what we're subject to is headline news. But basically, the grains were firmer on higher energy overnight. Also, too, wheat was firm overnight. That western wheat belt continues to see adverse weather, dryness, and cold weather. This afternoon's crop conditions report expected to show that wheat crop deteriorated another 2%. Now, Kansas City wheat closed just a little soft today. There's a little bit more moisture back in the forecast on the midday maps, but that's going to flip-flop back and forth. But as a whole, corn had a nice correction off the March highs there, and we're starting to retrace back to the upside, finishing higher on the day and at the coattails of the wheat market. This afternoon's planting progress reports expect to show about average progress in corn about 9%. Some analysts are looking for about 9 to 10% in soybean plantings, but I think we're higher than that, maybe 15%. Over the weekend, there were some fairly good rains, but you go from central Illinois into central Indiana, it's fairly dry in some spots, and visit with a couple producers. They were working some ground locally here, maybe this afternoon or tomorrow for sure on a restart. But you get northwest of us, pretty wet, fairly wet. They've been seeing that moisture system move up through that northwestern corner of Illinois and Wisconsin. So it's going to be a little while for them, but it's still early, Todd.
I know that on Wednesday we'll be watching to see what happens, if anything, at the end of this straight open, straight close thing, as it's related to the ceasefire with Iran and the war there. What else are you watching that we need to pay attention to?
Well, it's going to come down to summer weather, a little bit longer-term weather, but we're ways away from that. But short-term, near-term demand. We saw the shipments report this morning. That's the weekly shipments. We shipped out 1.6 million metric tons of corn. That was about 300,000 tons higher than expected. Bean shipments, 748. The average guess was 560. But wheat shipments, a little light. But overall, we're shipping out what we sold this far. The main thing as a producer in through here is we do get some strength in through here. We're kind of targeting a move back close to this $5 benchmark in December corn and a move back towards the upper end of the trading range. It's 1180, 1190 on November beans to make some catch-up sales. A lot of individuals have bought crop insurance, kind of using that as downside protection, but we still need to market the grain. And we still need to take advantage of some higher prices here to try to do better than just average. So I think there's going to be some marketing opportunities here as we move forward.
And thank you much, Kurt.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, and you are the public in public radio. Thank you for listening, and do know that it's because of you that we're still here. It's because of you that we can manage to bring you ag programming each and every business day of the year. But we still need your help. It's our spring fund drive, and I'd like you to dial in right now with some of that aid, financial that is, at 217-244-9455 or go to willgive.org, willag.org. If your soil-applied herbicide doesn't control water hemp as long as it once did, your populations, well, they might be resistant. And perhaps it's time to take a new look at an old herbicide, thanks University of Illinois Extension's Aaron Hager, in your annual battle against water hemp. Metribuzin. Recent research conducted in 15 states from North Dakota to Texas has shown effective water hemp control longer into the growing season than what is possible with other herbicides. But the most critical factor to achieving residual control of water hemp with metribuzin is the application rate. For the dark prairie soils of central and northern Illinois, he says 10 ounces of a 75 DF formulation is ideal. We're now joined by Ben Brown, agricultural economist with FAPRI, that's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. He's also with University of Missouri Extension. Thank you for taking some time with us. On the FAPRI note, they produced an outlook, I think, at the beginning of April. Can you give me some idea what the farm outlook might be, according to FAPRI?
Yeah, sure. So for those that aren't familiar with the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute, or FAPRI, we are a group of economists here at the University of Missouri. This will be our 43rd year in existence, but We provide farm policy analysis to USDA, Congress, industry groups, et cetera. And to do that, we have what we call our baseline outlook for 10 years, which is how policy is scored in a 10-year period. And so we have our baseline of you know, agriculture markets, both here in the U.S. and around the globe, trade, farm income, and of the like. And that's what we use as our starting point when we do policy analysis. Now, as it comes to the baseline forecast, it is out 10 years, but as everybody knows, weather and geopolitical changes, changes in policy. We don't assume any changes in policy from the current policy in the 10-year period. All those things can change the outlook. And so, you know, you get 10 years out and, you know, it's maybe not the best barometer of what will happen, but it's at least a barometer of if things stayed the same, this is where it could end up. And it's just a nice starting point for analysis. However, the initial years kind of help paint some direction. And so, you know, for our near-term outlook, you know, we continue to show farm finances having a distinct difference between row crops and the livestock sectors. Again, this is like the fourth year that has been true, and it continues this year. We do have some increases in crop prices, which, again, we've kind of experienced in the futures market here of lately. But some of those increasing crop prices are being offset with elevated input costs again, especially in the fuel and fertilizer sectors. And so when we look at you know, the crop markets, maybe a little bit better of an economic scenario for corn and soybean producers than 2025. However, you know, it's still not great and continues to be very weak. The other thing that I guess I would point out is at least a starting point for discussion is we have seen some clarification in the renewable fuel policy, but there's some hidden provisions, or I shouldn't say hidden. They're not hidden. They're just they're below surface level provisions in biofuel policy that make that environment still relatively unclear. So to give an example, as we did get some guidance in terms of how international feedstock imports will be utilized in the biofuel policy. They're set to go in effect in 2028. Well, what does that mean for the short run? Well, they, you know, we could see a resumption of imports of feedstock credits potentially. It'll matter what happens in the trade environment with shifting in tariffs, which have kind of been going on and off. But you can envision a scenario here maybe to where some of the biofuel policy gains or the biofuel policies that came out earlier this month or last month in March that were favorable for producers, you know, a small change in trade policy that we don't think has any implications for biofuel policy could actually, you know, remove quite a bit of soybean oil demand from the mix as well. So all those things matter and certainly, you know, still paint kind of a murky picture for the biofuel industry as we move through 2026.
Let me see if I can understand a little bit about the soybean oil demand, because the RVO, it appears, should push soybean oil demand. But what I think you just told me is that may be delayed until 2028, because that's when things go into effect. And between then and now, feedstocks from around the planet might still be able to fill that void.
Yeah, so my point here is the headline numbers seem to be supportive, and the industry has kind of responded. But there's a lot of intricate details that actually could create a scenario where we consume less biofuels in 26 than we did in 25. And that's currently not the headline numbers, and that's not what, you know, the industry is talking about. But again, you know, when we think about the international feedstock imports that kind of plagued us a few years ago, where we saw large used cooking oil imports from China, you know, those have been curtailed largely because of tariffs. Well, you know, some of those tariffs are kind of ebbing and flowing now, and we might end up in a scenario where biofuel producers start re-importing product, maybe not necessarily used cooking oil, but other product to meet some of these higher blending RVOs, renewable volume obligations, because, you know, some of these provisions don't kick in until, you know, 2028 or even, you know, a year later or two. And of course, we're going to have some more discussion between now and then. So, yes, the headline numbers seem very supportive for the industry, but it is still, you know, there are some small details that could change that outlook very quickly and be relatively what's the word I'm looking for? They could happen kind of under the radar. You know, we could wake up one morning and be, you know, wonder why soybean oil is down so much on trade news. And again, it matters in terms of some of these very small details.
What else is in the report that you think is important to make sure producers and others know?
So the other thing is, you know, we do have, you know, measures of farm income and government cost, and we continue to see, you know, very strong government payments as it relates to some of the changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill, whether that be crop insurance or ARC and PLC payments. Some of those ARC and PLC payments are based on delay, you know, crop years before this current calendar year. So it's a little bit of a, you know, delayed reaction, if you will. But, you know, we do see government payments being relatively strong in 2026 and providing a little bit of support later in this year. Those will come in October. And so that's one thing that's in here and something to be noted. The other thing that's not in here, but something we've already started getting asked about is, you know, how do these high oil prices and fertilizer prices potentially impact acreage? And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of conversations around corn acres as it relates to high fertilizer prices, corn yield as it relates to relatively high fertilizer prices. You know, if these stick around for a year or two, which maybe something to think about just from the infrastructure damage that's happened, it actually potentially leads to higher corn acres maybe next year than what we maybe would think. And part of the reason for that is it just impacts corn acres, you know, high input costs and high fertilizer, high oil prices impact corn acres elsewhere in the world at a higher rate than it does here in the U.S. and could send corn prices high enough that we increase acres in 2027. So something just to think about. It's not necessarily in the report, but that's kind of that's one possibility that's out there. Not saying it will happen. It's just one possibility.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it. We look forward to talking with you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Don.
Again, thank you, Ben. Ben Brown is an Extension Agricultural Economist at the University of Missouri and with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute there. If you'd like to see the 2026 FAPRI U.S. Agricultural Market Outlook, you can do that by searching FAPRI Ag Outlook 2026. Should be the first thing that comes up. The report was released the 26th day of March. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He is at Everstream Analytics. We have a lot to cover, Mark. Let's begin in the hard red winter wheat growing regions, and we'll talk about this into the Midwest as well, because there are soybeans up in some parts of Illinois, even parts of central Illinois, but there was some really cold air. Do you think it added to the issues that the hard red winter wheat is undergoing at this point related to drought and whether there was enough frost or freezes out there to be bothersome or a real problem?
Well, Todd, by our assessment, we don't think that there was any kind of widespread damage. Based on how far advanced the crop is and based on temperatures here on Saturday and Sunday mornings, we don't see things lining up for there to be widespread damage. However, you can't rule out some isolated pockets, especially in areas of like Northwest Kansas that drop down all the way into the low 20s. And that's the part of Kansas that they're just starting to see some jointing of weather, of winter wheat. And with those types of temperatures, they're kind of right at fringe levels where there may have been a few pockets of issues, but we don't see this as being a widespread damage event that would have resulted in, at least from a temperature standpoint, any kind of big production loss.
And in the Midwest, were there areas that got cold enough if a crop might have been up? For instance, beans have some issues, particularly if the hook has just emerged but not rolled out all the way with the leaves. That would have been maybe caught by some of this cold weather too?
Well, for any area that planted pretty early up north in like northern Illinois, northern Iowa, that's an area, again, some maybe very isolated pockets, but with most of the planting likely more, you know, in the southern half of the Midwest, with temperatures the past couple of mornings just dropping down low 20s, some upper 20s in portions of like northern Illinois and central Illinois. But again, very, very variable situation. So it wasn't very widespread.
We have now gotten to the point where it is go time for farmers across the Corn Belt for corn and soybean planting. What does the next week look like?
Yeah, overall, temperatures are going to be warming back up again. In fact, the next 4 to 5 days is back in the warmer than normal category. However, things look to cool off again next week. So this springtime of highly variable temperatures, which even for this time of year has been, you know, more volatile even compared to recent years, it looks like that's going to continue as we move into early May. And then from a precip standpoint, overall, the pattern is beginning to shift drier across the Corn Belt following last week's very stormy conditions, above normal rainfall and flooding rainfall in the northern belt like Wisconsin, far northern Illinois, and Michigan. So things are improving there. It's going to take some time for some fields to dry out, but definitely a less active pattern here for the remainder of April and into looking out in early May as well.
Speaking of active, reminds me that farmers will be on the roadway with big equipment. So if you happen to be traveling in the Midwest anywhere, be sure that you're on the lookout for them. It is really easy to come up on the back end of one of these pieces of equipment so very fast and not realize it. So be sure to be watching and be safe. The farmers are looking out for you. You look out for them too. Finally, take a look. Speaking of looking out at the second crop or Safrinha corn in Brazil, where are some issues there, I think?
Yeah, certainly not as good of weather as they had prior to the past week or so. We've seen the pattern shift drier, especially in parts of the southern Safrinha areas in around Paraná, and also now beginning to wind down the rainy season up north with kind of daily storm activity here becoming much more isolated and scattered across that region. For that drier acreage within and around Paraná, the southern part of the belt, they're going to remain on the dry side this week and even into the early part of next week, but there are indications and pretty strong indications that they get back into rains later on next week. So that's going to be important to roll forward and ultimately get into those rains to provide a nice replenishment of soil moisture before we enter the dry season across that area.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Do make a visit to our website at willgive.org or make this phone call at 217-244-9455. They're waiting for you to tell them that you're calling in or writing in support of the Ag Programming from Illinois Public Media. And thank you much. I appreciate it. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.